Welcome to the Basketball Index Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor. We got Krishna producing, and we are talking to TJ McBride today. He's an NBA writer, and we're going to be covering the state of the Nuggets. TJ, how you doing? How you feeling about the team?
I'm feeling good. I've been watching Eurobasket, so I'm full of hope and excitement watching Jokic destroy teams like Finland. And it's also good to be on this podcast with another Taylor. So I am not upset. It's always good to talk with you guys. I'm excited to dive into all of this.
Oh, secrets hiding that Taylor. Okay, so I'm thinking this. I got to TJ McBride. I like a lot. I'm workshopping. I got a book in the works here that I'm going on. I'm thinking my middle name's Collins. So I'm thinking TC Wyman on the book cover. You think that might sell a few more copies?
Doesn't that sound like the exact kind of pen name that you would expect from an author? It sounds exactly right. Like it's kind of came up with it. Creepy how perfectly that fits.
I like it. All right, so. The Nuggets, we were talking about this a little bit before the show started. This team is sort of in an interesting spot because in 21, they trade for Aaron Gordon. They seem loaded. They seem like they're on a roll. They seem like they're destined for a finals appearance, maybe a ring. And then injuries happen. Jamal Murray is out. He misses the entire next season. Michael Porter, you know, came out of the draft with back issues, had back surgery. So last year was sort of a lost cause. It was basically Joker out there with a lot of like G League players. Now they get everybody back. What are the expectations? Are people nervous? What's going on there?
This is now officially the period of time where the Nuggets are all in on winning a title. It's always been about not skipping steps, doing things the correct way, taking their time, making their own goals for what a successful season will be. It appears that all of that conservative thinking has now been eradicated from this organization. They are all in on winning. They're doing everything they can to win. That is their entire goal right now. And Calvin Booth's approach to actually running and building a franchise, which he is now the general manager of the team now that Tim Connolly has left for Minnesota. He is an incredibly aggressive guy. Hence why you saw KCP, you saw Bruce Brown signed very quickly. He is not wasting time and he's going after the guys that he wants. So right now, this is what they perceive to be their title window. Everyone is healthy. Everyone is ready to go. There should be nothing to be concerned about entering the first game of the regular season. Jokic is clearly in midseason form right now with the way that he's playing for Serbia. And all cylinders are firing and they have every expectation to go deep into the playoffs and contend for a title and be one of the elite teams in that category.
Yeah, I definitely like those two moves. I feel like they added some defense. They added some lineup utility, some flexibility. But yeah, let's start with Joker. It all circles around him. Coming off back-to-back MVPs, I would like to say partially spearheaded by people like us here at Basketball Index. But the big thing last year was he took the jump defensively. How'd that happen?
So for me, he's always been a smart defender. It's been more about him learning what he can do with his body and how to maximize that. And the only way he was able to do that for so many years was to play up at the level of the screen. So he was always at the three-point line so that he can keep guys connected to him and in front of him because he didn't have the athleticism to be able to recover when they have a full head of steam coming at him in a drop defense. So he was always one-dimensional in terms of how he could be a productive defender. That's what allowed teams to be able to put him on an island and attack him because you could still do that even if it is his preferred method of defending. Nowadays, he's able to play multiple different schemes. We've seen him all out blitz and double to extremely good impact where he's grabbing so many steals, which is why his defensive metrics are just becoming ridiculous at this point. You're seeing him be able to play a drop defense, know how to be there positionally, and know how quickly he can recover to the rim if needed if a pass happens to get dropped by him. He's learning the nuances. He's no longer just an incredibly smart offensive player. He's taking that IQ and he's adapting it to the defensive side of the ball. And that's what's been so impressive to me is that Jokic hasn't become a better athlete. He hasn't become an all-world anything in particular from this point. He's just refined the edges to the point that he isn't a liability out there anymore. And when you're able to add in the fact that his hands are so good and he can get so many steals and his defensive rebounding is so good, he's just inhaling rebounds whenever he's out there. That combination will always give you a strong basis of a good defense, but now that he can play multiple different schemes and you can't just isolate him out every single time. The Nuggets have a defensive foundation that can actually become potentially top 10 worthy. So that, I think, is the biggest difference. He's no longer a one-dimensional defender. He can play many different schemes, which is, you know, absolutely required when you get to playoff basketball.
So let's switch to the offensive side. I feel like with stars, we want to nitpick a lot. Or, you know, there's people like me, people like on TV, where our jobs revolve around sometimes criticizing or pointing out things that players do really well. When you watch him play offense, do you think there's a way that he could evolve his game further? I don't know if his like skills can really improve at this point, because they're all like, if like it's a video game, they're so maxed out. But do you think he could be deployed differently, or do you, I don't know, what do you see? Because I feel like I'm almost from the stock market, where it's just like growth.
Yes.
What do you think a possible next step, if there even is one, for a back-to-back MVP is on offense?
Well, there's two, and they're entirely different things, in my opinion. One has been the thing that everyone's been yelling about for years. Will he take more and more and more command of the offense? Will he realize that he is the guy and make sure everything is ran through him and not have spaces where he kind of disappears? That has not been nearly as much of a problem recently, but the Nuggets have been wildly injured. So it's going to be interesting to see how that dynamic plays out now that they're going to have Jamal Murray back and Michael Porter Jr. back. And I wonder if Jokic is going to start taking a, you know, more of a back seat more than he should. That's really just a philosophical thing, and I would much rather trust that Jokic has the right idea of what to do on a basketball court than I do. So if he does that entering the season, I'm not going to be complaining. But that tends to be one of those spots where you wonder if he had more of a mindset like Luka, if he would be able to really put pressure on teams in a way that he does not force as of right now. So that's the first thing, but I'm not too worried about that one. The second one I find much more interesting, which is his three-point shot, which is one of the streakiest things you'll ever see. He'll shoot 49% one month, 31% the next month, 55% the following. It's just this roller coaster of up and down. And it could be due to fatigue, because he's carrying such an offensive burden. He's had small little wrist injuries here and there throughout the years, which could hurt his range on his shot. But if he can really start to harness that three-point shooting, if he can become just a consistent 37% three-point shooter regularly without the, you know, valleys and peaks that he has right now, then I think that you can see his handles become more unlocked. You'll see him have more space to just attack off the dribble and create literally as an initiator of the offense, almost, you know, more of a point guard than just a dribble handoff initiator from the elbows. I think that's a very interesting wrinkle that we haven't really talked about, because we haven't needed to. He's plenty good on enough on offense. There's no reason to nitpick the fact that he's shooting a few percentage points lower from three. But if he can get that consistent, I do think there's going to be an expansion in his game. Or really, it's just, you know, fully actualizing the skills he already has by giving him that space.
So he is the best passer in the league.
It's unquestioned at this point, yeah.
That's evident. Is there anyone on the team that this is something that you can't really see in the data. This is something you need to watch, you know, game to game. Is there anyone on the team where he has special chemistry with, whether it's cutting, finding guys on the perimeter? Is there anyone that it seems like they sort of just have a connection?
Well, it's funny, because people have forgotten just how comfortable him and Jamal Murray are together. Like, when they were in a two-man game in any setting, there was nothing you could do because there were so many counters and they knew each other so well. So it's the low-hanging fruit answer, and I really don't care that it is. I know it seems obvious, but let's be honest here. Like, we haven't seen that, and we haven't been reminded of how dominant an offense can be when there are two guys who can work together and like to work together, who both have the gravity that each of them provide. So that is just something that I think that we might have forgotten about as just, you know, basketball watchers as a whole, because we haven't seen it in essentially 2 years. So not seeing that will be startling when people do eventually see it again. They're reminded of just how impossible it is to be able to defend a two-man game like that. The other guy that I think is underrated in this, someone that might not be mentioned as often, is Bones Highland. Bones Highland is really figuring out the speed of basketball at the NBA level, as well as where he fits, either as the number one scoring option off the bench or when he's playing with Jokic, at a speed that I didn't anticipate. It's so hard for guys as lead guards to come into the NBA and figure out that kind kind of nuance. But somehow Bones Highland, despite being a much more of a raw and kind of unfiltered kind of a lead guard, he's figured out the details in a way that haven't been really spoken about much. He knows where to cut. He knows when to cut. He knows the angles of how he'll be able to get to the rim because of the way that Jokic's gravity pulls people. He's already started to see those details, and I think that is going to be huge because the Nuggets, when they start blending their bench unit and their starters, being able to bring in Bones Highland for a Kentavious Caldwell-Pope will keep the shooting on there, adds an extra creator, and just makes that couple-minute stretch where you have the starters and bench blended just completely unable to be guarded. And having him already know how to fit with Jokic and how to play off of him is a huge benefit that the Nuggets are going to need now that they lost Will Barton and Monte Morris in the deal for KCP.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Bones had a fantastic rookie season. He had a top 10 O-LeBron for rookies in our database going back to 2014. I don't know if you remember this. He hit three straight threes in game four against Golden State. I think like the first one was kind of coming around a screen, and then the next two were pull-ups, and it forced a timeout. It's funny. I think I say this every episode. I'm not like a one play scout, and then I talk about one play that can. I think I just am a one play scout.
But no, that's important evidence in my opinion, though, because seeing somebody who's a rookie who knows that his team is on the line, because it was the third quarter of that game, and the Nuggets weren't necessarily close at halftime. They needed a spark. They needed somebody to drag that life back out of them, and Bones just happily stepped into it against Golden State in the playoffs as a rookie. That's a really tough thing to do, and to have the confidence to do it with the MVP on your team and not really be concerned about the fact that you should probably be trying to get him the ball, but knowing that he had a gap and be able to hit those shots, that's massive. The fact that he has that ability already, that he has not just the confidence but the presence of mind and the calmness to be able to hit those shots in those moments, that is exactly why the Nuggets were able to trade a Will Barton and Monte Morris, two creators, for a finisher in KCP, because they feel like they can trust Bones Highland to make the correct decisions when games really matter because of moments specifically like that.
Yeah, confidence plus ability makes me very high on Bones. It's also just he has a fantastic nickname.
He's just absolutely great.
Let's talk about Jamal Murray. He missed all of last year. He's coming back. You ever get a Fred Van Fleet comp for him?
I'm not going to lie. I saw in the outline and I kind of had like a half instinctual laugh when I saw that, because one, I had never heard it. And two, I thought it was kind of ridiculous at first. And I started to, you know, look into the numbers more and really try and get a better idea of where those two players lined up. And they are significantly more comparable than I realized. When you look at synergy play types, in addition to how you guys break things down, it's also incredibly comparable. So it's not even just one database that's able to put them on the same tier. So I think you are actually significantly more right than I originally noticed. The couple things that I would say in terms of a difference is, one, Jamal Murray is just bigger and stronger. He's 6'3", like 225. Fred VanVleet's like 6'1", maybe 200 right now. And that size is a big deal to me. It allows Jamal Murray to be better in isolation and a little bit better in transition. Murray was also just a better spot-up shooter when he was playing. Murray was in the 99th percentile in 2020-21 as a spot-up shooter. Ooh. Hit 1.377 points per possession on spot-up opportunity. So I do agree that they are very comparable, but I'm still giving the edge to Jamal Murray in terms of who is the better player of the two.
Man, I'll tell you what, whenever I'm coming up with questions for people that watch the team on a day-to-day basis, I have an ulcer forming in my stomach that I'm going to be very wrong on some comp like that or
something.
That's
how it's supposed to be. That's what stimulates good conversation. It's okay to steer into that sometimes.
I think one other big thing with Murray is, I don't know if you've heard, you know, you're probably closer ear to the ground than me. He got hurt towards the end of not last season, but the season before. Yes. So it's sort of like the Kawhi thing where you're not rushing them back. They're not coming back on a short timetable. They're actually coming back on a much longer one, which would lead me to believe that the beginning of the season, he should look better, basically, is what I'm trying to say, than maybe other players coming back from injury, because I feel like the new age medical staff is like, hey, maybe we don't all break these extremely valuable players. What do you expect to see come even preseason?
I actually expect him to start slow. He is a notoriously slow starter his entire career. He missed his first 19 shots of his career in the regular season. That's always kind of been his MO. And now he hasn't played in 2 years. And oh, by the way, the Nuggets start in Golden State where he tore his ACL. So I'm not necessarily expecting him to just fly out of the gates and be Jamal Murray again. I expect him to be on a minute restriction. I expect him to play sparingly. I expect the Nuggets not to play him on the second nights of back-to-back. And I expect him to have to catch up to the speed of the game again. Before he got hurt, he was finally finding his rhythm, not just as a scorer and not just as another person on the other side of Jokic's two-man game, but as his own creator, as someone who can run a pick and roll with Aaron Gordon and create a play for somebody else. He was coming into his own in that regard, and I think it's going to be an uphill battle to get back to that, and I think that's going to be a big point of emphasis for him. So I do expect him to be fully healthy. I do expect him to get fully back into, you know, who Jamal Murray is by the playoffs arriving, but I do think he will start slow as he has historically done based on the fact of all of these things that he has fought through to get to this point.
Michael Porter Jr., another guy coming back from injury. He shot the lights out in 2021. He was eighth in our three-point shot-making metric. And then just offensively, he was pretty otherworldly. He had an A in every points per possession shot type except for post-ups, which is pretty unreal. But back surgery is this his second back surgery?
Yes. You can't have two back surgeries only like what, a year into being able to drink alcohol and anyone feel comfortable. That should be a fair assumption about everything that we look at Michael Porter Jr. with. Like, he's had two back surgeries and he's this young and he's 6'10". So that's not good. Like, we always have to take that grain of salt with this. But when he's playing, he's still 6'10" Klay Thompson. Like, that's a mind-blowing thing. And I don't think that that's, you know, a blasphemous statement. I don't think it's over-exaggerating. He is that level of shooter when he's healthy. And when you put that kind of a guy next to Jokic, someone who can just shoot even when someone's literally standing beneath them and he won't even notice they exist because he still gets a foot of lift on his jump shot every single time he jumps, that's just something that you have to continue to build within. I don't know what to expect. I've heard significantly less about his recovery than Jamal Murray's. I do know he's healthy. I do know that he said he's healthy. When he was interviewed at Summer League, he matter-of-factly said he's 100%. But that being said, everyone has seemingly heard less about Porter's recovery than they have about Jamal Murray's. So I just want to see it. I just want to see how he looks. I want to see how his burst is. I want to see if he looks stiff. I want to see if his hips have any problems after he's had this. I want to see if his foot issues that seem to stem from his back issues are all fixed. All of those things need to be seen before I have confidence. But if he does play, if he is who Michael Porter Jr. can be, it's a terrifying thought of how good this Nuggets team can be offensively. They should be absolutely top five with no excuse to be anything worse and able to outscore virtually any opponent who steps in front of them.
Yeah, the offense from back-to-back MVP Joker to Jamal Murray, Michael Porter Jr., Bones, on paper, in 2K, ooh, this is a steamrolly type team. Aaron Gordon, he was brought in 2 years ago at the trade deadline. He's an interesting mix of size and athleticism. He was used as a point-of-attack defender last season. Yeah. I'm not sure if that was just because they didn't have anyone or if –
That is exactly right.
What did that look like? Because he is a very large individual.
He did a very good job. Again, he was playing out of position, so there were bad moments as much as there were good moments, but he did a very, very good job. Denver simply had no other answer to any elite perimeter threat. Whether it was 6'1 Donovan Mitchell or 6'8 LeBron, it just didn't matter. It had to be Aaron Gordon last year. So that – forced the Nuggets to do something they didn't want to do, which is take Gordon away from playing that rover position on the back line defensively. Because you can just let Jokic grab every rebound. He's plenty good positionally and plenty big enough to take over most of the rebounding duties himself. So allowing him to kind of roam that back line, put him on whatever the worst shooter is of those two big men and just let him terrorize passing lanes and the rim is something the Nuggets didn't get a chance to do last year because they didn't have any point of attack defenders. That is why Calvin Booth made sure he went out and found two very good, if not pretty good, on-ball defenders in Kentavious Caldwell-Pope and Bruce Brown. I know Bruce Brown played more big than he did small for Brooklyn, but he has the capability to be a five-position defender and stay in front of guards on the perimeter. I have complete faith in that fact. So having the two of them And even Jamal Murray, who is not a liability anymore, he's plenty big enough and strong enough to handle almost any guard in front of him nowadays. That allows Aaron Gordon to kind of try and fit into that Draymond Green defensive archetype of just roaming around and destroying anything that comes near him. And that's very exciting for me because that's what made the Nuggets defense so good in those nine games or whatever that they played before everybody got hurt a couple years ago. So I'm very excited about Aaron Gordon's season. And we didn't really touch on the offensive part of it. He is going to get so many uncontested dunks from just cutting to the rim because there's so much defensive or offensive gravity from the three other players who are scorers on the court. He is going to score easily and effortlessly every single night on top of being able to add this kind of defensive versatility.
Yeah, I really enjoy watching him as a cutter just because cutters aren't normally that huge and explosive. But the defensive talk leads into the final question, I feel like, in a great way. What do you think the closing lineup is going to look like for the Nuggets?
Yeah, so the low-hanging fruit answer, the answer of which I do not agree with, would be just to close the game with the starters. Jamal Murray, Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, Michael Porter Jr., Aaron Gordon, Nikola Jokic. You got shooting, you got defenders, you got creation. It all sounds good. It should be one of the best starting units in basketball. I think it's a great unit. When you get to the playoffs and you're playing against elite offensive talents who can just attack any mismatch that they deem worthy of attacking, having somebody like Michael Porter Jr. on the floor who cannot stay in front of guys on or off ball against screens, that is something that concerns me because now you're not only trying to attack Nikola Jokic, you can also attack Michael Porter Jr. And having two guys that you can isolate and identify can be a death sentence in playoff series. So in my opinion, closing games for the Nuggets in games that matter, I would not be surprised if Bruce Brown plays small forward alongside Jamal Murray and KCP and Aaron Gordon and Nikola Jokic to give them five players who cannot be isolated and just attack defensively over and over again. They don't lose too much offense because they can survive without Michael Porter, but you get that extra defensive boost from a Bruce Brown. And also, he's a great cutter. So I love the idea of Bruce Brown closing games instead of Michael Porter Jr. to give the Nuggets a chance to really match up with any team defensively that is in front of them.
Bones up. I was just going to say, do you think there's any possibility we see some Bones possibly in a closing lineup?
I not in games that matter. I wouldn't be surprised to see it in the regular season just to look at how Jamal and Bones play together and to add an extra creator to take some pressure off of their if you're playing an elite defensive team. But I don't think you can trust Bones' defense enough to put him on the perimeter and in that type of a setting. If you had to, I wouldn't be upset. But if you have these other options on the table, I think it makes significantly more sense to let Bones be your Jordan Clarkson type player, especially in playoff games, and go to more defensive oriented lineups to close them out. So that's where I lean on that. But then again, Bones is rapidly growing at a pace that nobody really saw coming. Maybe he makes me look like a fool and can become that guy, but I'm not currently there myself.
What do you think it takes for Joker's individual success as well as team success to secure a third MVP?
That is a fascinating question because I think what could happen is Jokic's scoring goes down a little bit, but the Nuggets are a top three seed in the West, and he averages a triple-double, and he is just destroying anybody and everybody in front of him. If the Nuggets can do something like that, but I think it's going to take an extreme circumstance for Jokic to win three in a row. Voters just don't like voting guys three in a row. I think there's only been four or five ever who have had three straight MVPs. So while Jokic is one of the 13 guys to win it back-to-back, winning it three times in a row is ridiculously difficult. I do think he has a chance, and I do think he's great value to bet on right now just because the Nuggets are going to be so good and he'll be able to have less pressure on him to be able to do these other things that could be seen as also equally incredible as his past couple seasons have been. But I do think it'll take a near triple-double average and just a stupid amount of regular season wins for him to be that guy.
Finishing up this episode, I know nothing about Nuggets history, but I'm going to go ahead and, with a hot take, this is the greatest Nuggets team of all time heading into the season.
I'm not from Denver, and I was also not a big Nuggets historical kind of guy, but I have talked to a lot of people who are, and many of them agree that this has been the best iteration of the Nuggets. This period of Nuggets basketball around Nikola Jokic has been not only the most fun and most exciting with most hope, but also arguably the best, and I think it is the most talented team they've ever had. It is a truly talented team.
This All right. Oh, sorry, go, Krishna.
I was just going to say this is probably the best chance they've had at a championship in their history, right?
Yes, I would absolutely say that. And I really think that they should be mentioned more in that elite group of teams with the Golden State Warriors, with the Clippers, who are always thrown up at the top of these lists because they are so deep. But they all have injury concerns and they're waiting for guys to come back as well. To see the odds come out where, you know, so many of these teams are between plus 300 and plus 600 to win titles and the Nuggets are that next tier down is very confusing to me. And I'm very interested to see if the Nuggets can fulfill this because they are that good and they belong in that elite contender group, in my opinion, right now.
All right, TJ McBride with the state of the Nuggets. TJ, what's your Twitter handle?
Yeah, at TJ McBride NBA. Probably don't want to read my tweets, but if you want to, I guess it's there for you.
All right, that'll wrap it up. I'm Taylor. Krishna, thank you for producing, and we'll see you on the next episode of the Basketball Index Podcast.